You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people who are trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. With the pending rollout of Australia's national broadband network, the shake-up and fallout of the telecommunications industry continues. Communications Minister Stephen Conroy said the project would be fast-tracked, meaning the construction of the backhaul component of the project, that is, the telecommunications links that connects the suburbs together, could start as early as September this year. The announcement a few weeks ago by Prime Minister Kevin Rudd that the government would go it alone in building the network came as a surprise to many, and probably none more so than the current players in the Australian telecommunications landscape. The government would create an entity to roll out the NBN, which would be 51% government-owned, leaving the remaining 49% open for interested parties to buy into the project to a level of no more than 15%. Many rejoiced in the realisation that this would be the end of Telstra's monopolistic approach to communications in Australia. Others in the fact that this was the largest infrastructure project in Australia for decades. Parallels were drawn with the building of the Snowy River Scheme and the National Road System. The reality is, the copper that runs to every house in Australia is about to be replaced with fibre optic in the next several years, moving Australia well and truly into a modern, connected world of the 21st century, a delivery platform that should last well and truly beyond our lifetimes. But let's look at the current dilemmas faced by the telcos. Telstra has never been as quiet as they are right now. With the exodus of the three amigos and their henchmen, and the government's new NBN plans, the monopolistic and arrogant attitude of the company is being humbled by the levelling of the playing field, something that Telstra has never had to deal with until now. Separation of Telstra's retail and wholesale businesses is almost a certainty, something that the telco has been dead set against for the past few years. In fact, it was the underlying reason why it didn't tender a valid bid to build the NBN. It wanted a guarantee from the government that it wouldn't be separated, a guarantee that was not forthcoming. The NBN announcement has also major impacts on the business plans of smaller telcos. ISP iPrimus has all but given up the installation of new DSLAMs, now preferring to quadruple its coverage area for ADSL 2+, by doing a deal with Telstra to resell its ADSL 2 products. This begs the question, what about the other ISPs? What incentive do they have in rolling out expensive DSLAMs on a copper network that will soon be redundant? Will other ISPs go the way of iPrimus? If so, what happens to competition in the next 5 years or so? Will Telstra win by default? Time will tell, but it seems that the rocky road of broadband in Australia will remain unmade for the next few years at least.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner takes a look at ICE TV's High Court win over the Nine Network. It was Google last week. This week it's Microsoft's turn for profits heading south. Apple are red-faced over an offensive game which made it to their online store. We find out about the technology behind BlueTrack, but first up, here's the latest happenings in the tech world this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple apologises for deeply offensive iPhone game. Queensland gets biometric driver licences. The CSIRO wins a landmark Wi-Fi patent case. Optus joins the government net filter trial, and a new hybrid electric car will feed power back into the electricity grid. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Apple has removed the game from its online iPhone store after complaints from a baby health lobby. The game, Baby Shaker, was developed by an independent software house and requires users to violently shake their iPhone to make a baby stop crying. In a statement released on Thursday last week, Apple apologised for what it described as a deeply offensive game and said it should not have been approved for distribution on the App Store. The application appeared in Apple's App Store on Monday and cost $0.99 to download. Apple received the complaints from the Sarah Jane Brain Foundation, which is a New York-based group seeking to prevent brain injuries from shaken baby syndrome. In the first quarter of 2009, Apple reported a 15% increase in sales and $1.7 billion in profits. The good news for Apple shareholders was attributed to sales of games in Apple's App Store, as well as strong sales of iPods, iPhones, and music through iTunes. Systems integration company Unisys announced last week that it will be providing facial image capture and recognition technology to Queensland Transport as part of a major overhaul of the state's driver licence system. A spokeswoman for Queensland Transport, Ms. Judy Oswin, said last week that the new digital licence will deliver a more secure form of documentation for Queenslanders and that the new driver licence will be harder to forge or alter. This is expected to have a direct impact on the instances of identity theft to Queensland licence holders. The new driver licence developed by Unisys will be based on a contact-only smart card, which will store a digitised photograph and signature, and the system will use facial recognition technology to detect multiple licences issued to the same person. Licence holders will still need to attend a licence issuing centre for the digital photograph and signature to be taken. Unisys expected deployment to take approximately 5 years, as existing laminated licences expire and are renewed. Australia's Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation has won a four-year-long legal battle over intellectual property used in 802.11 wireless networking devices. Under the terms of the settlement, the CSIRO was prevented from broadcasting news of the resolution, which has only now just been made public. The legal action was lodged against 14 international manufacturers, including Hewlett-Packard, Intel, Dell, Toshiba, ASUS, Microsoft, and Nintendo. The CSIRO argued that a patent which was granted to it in 1996 entitled it to royalties from any company that incorporated the 802.11 wireless standard in their devices. The court case was being heard in the US District Court in Tyler, Texas, and ended with the last of the 14 companies agreeing to negotiate a settlement on Monday last week. The CSIRO's Deputy Chief Executive of Operations, Mr. Mike Whelan, said in a statement last week that the CSIRO was very pleased with the outcome and that the compensation payments and ongoing royalties would be reinvested for future research. The Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, last week announced that Optus would now be participating in the Australian Government's NetFilter pilot. Senator Conroy welcomed Optus by saying that its participation will help ensure the government obtains robust results from the pilot, which would inform the evidence-based development of the government's ISP filtering policy. No media release was forthcoming from Optus about its participation in the NetFilter trial. Optus is the second largest ISP in Australia and joins seven other ISPs now participating in the NetFilter pilot. The controversial filtering trial has been overshadowed in recent weeks with the leaking of a secret blacklist of sites and technical concerns raised by industry experts over the feasibility of a network-based filter. And the development of a new hybrid petrol-electric car has been announced in New South Wales, with the capacity to feed electricity back into the state power grid. A research team from the University of Technology Sydney has taken a Toyota Prius hybrid electric vehicle and added extra batteries and power management electronics. New South Wales Deputy Premier Ms. Carmel Tebbutt.
It is the first hybrid electric car that is both a plug-in hybrid, which means that you can plug it into a normal power point to recharge the batteries, but it is also the first car that can feed back into the grid.
Two power points above the rear bumper bar provide for the car to be charged and also for unused power to be fed back into the electricity grid. One of the cars has been made available to the New South Wales Government for trialling. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Australian websites were nominated amongst the world's best.
That's not good, is it?
Anyway,
I don't know.
Team Heg 5 is currently used for the UK's preview service.
K-Rudd drops that bombshell.
Oh, I've got work ones, you see.
Fibre, baby. Fibre all the way.
It's very serious over that side.
Oh, there. Very, very serious.
It is very serious, isn't it?
We're almost there.
Almost there.
99 times out of 100 employees are not going to be malicious about it, but you've got to protect yourself against that one.
Lego Darth Vader's trying to order stuff in canteens and things.
It surprised me hugely.
Not Rigi Dig OS X disk application.
The Windows Server Foundation really is your first server. It's absolutely an entry-level server.
Hurrah! At long last.
This is a difficult issue for every company.
Help your problem, Doctor, by procreating and increasing the number of humans in your house.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Another week. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron is currently busily setting up the TV outside broadcast, which you'll all be able to watch on Ustream very shortly if you're watching or listening to us live. And Dr. Graham is in the studio. That is the panel this evening, but we'd love to have you along. Come and visit us. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. I've just logged in myself, actually, to find plenty of people there. Talking about electric cars, which you were talking about in the news there, Dr. Ron.
I was indeed.
Good evening to you both.
Good evening.
Good evening, Andrew.
How does a car put electricity back into the grid? An electric car? Like, you take it away? What? You sit there in a garage doing wheelies or something like that, and it, I don't know, does it generate more electricity than
it uses? You've got a big battery in your car. So if you've got an electric car that's got a battery in it, that can store electricity. So there's no reason why you couldn't sell that electricity back to your electricity provider at a time when they perhaps need more electricity. So at peak times, if your car happens to be plugged in and it's got power in its battery, why shouldn't it sell that power back?
Using it as a storage device and giving it back.
Storage device, yes.
So you're not actually, very clever.
You're not actually generating more than you need. You're actually storing it on their behalf and then giving it back.
Sometimes you can, and so, some of it you could generate. Like your electric car could reclaim power from, say, braking operations and use that to charge the battery. It could reclaim power from perhaps even having solar cells or something like that.
That'd be charge its batteries. Be good. And put solar cells on the roof of your car.
But even if you just left it sitting, plugged in, doing nothing else, perhaps if you went away for a week and left your car plugged in, it could charge the batteries off the grid when power's cheap and then sell that electricity back to the electricity provider when electricity is expensive during peak periods.
Just people
and
turn a
profit.
People will be watching electricity prices like they do petrol prices.
No, they'll be watching electricity prices like they watch stock prices and trading by the minute.
Yeah.
And if your car has the intelligence to do this, to buy electricity when it's cheap and sell electricity when it's expensive, then
how cool is that?
Stop the planet. I want to get off. I'm over this. This is getting ridiculous. Hey, this is television. Are you on Ustream now, Dr. Ron?
Nearly.
Okay, give me bear
five,
with us.
5 seconds. Yes.
Now,
four,
here's another three, interesting two, dilemma.
Dilemma?
When you're talking about computer hardware, things that don't really, you don't think about too much. If I was saying you were going to buy something on your car, or, you know, new bit of computer hardware, and I said it was blue, what would you think it would be?
It was blue.
Yeah, hardware, and it uses blue light. What do you think it'd be?
If it's got a blue handle on it, it's hot swappable.
Yeah, well, there you go. There's one using blue.
Really? I didn't know that. Is that what it means?
Yeah, isn't it?
Thought it was a nice
IBM
colour.
Servers or something? No.
What about Blu-ray? Everyone thinks of Blu-ray. Oh, yeah, Blu-ray disc.
Yeah.
What about the old humble mouse? The old little red thing that sits in the bottom of your laptop bag, and you hate getting it out because it never works. Microsoft have got a new blue mouse coming out. Well, actually, it's out. We're going to be talking to them tonight.
Instead of having a red light shining out the bottom of it,
it's a blue light.
It's a blue light.
Oh, yeah. I've got cordless mouses, that shine red lights.
Yeah, what is the collective noun for mice? Mouses.
Meese.
I don't know.
Goodness me. So, we're going to be talking about that tonight. What else have we got? All sorts of interesting things. Don't shake the baby. Very important.
Don't shake the paper. We'll have a disgrace.
Have a chat about that. Oh, in other news, you're probably all wanting to know this. Microsoft's Windows 7 release candidate. They can today is the 27th. Sorry if you're in another state, but we're generating our program on the 27th. 30th, 3 days from now, is the release date for the release candidate. In case you didn't know.
Ooh.
So they're really pushing Windows 7. To market. If you're listening to us on Switch up in Queensland, hi all of our Switch listeners, you can get it now. It's out.
Fantastic.
The release candidate. So
I can't wait.
I'm a bit excited about it.
Our Queenslanders lucky. They get us and IE7, Windows 7 on the same day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they do in Cairns, High Cairns, everyone up there. Yes, they do indeed. So anyway, there's a bit of news for Windows 7 candidate.
Fantastic.
Dr. Ron.
Here I am.
Correspondence that needs to be entered into apart from those chatting on the chat.
Lots of correspondence. Welcome to a new forum user, Sean O'Reilly, who signed up a couple of weeks ago. Good to have you on board, Sean, on the forum. And if you're not a forum user, then why not go to forum.com techtalkradio.com.au. Bruce says, hi guys, I don't know if you remember me. Last year I emailed you inquiring as to if anyone had any knowledge about purchasing overseas maps for Australian automotive GPS devices. I own a Uniden GPS with an Australian database, and prior to contacting you, I'd contacted the manufacturer and was told that despite the fact that the unit was sold overseas and had essentially, I believed, MIO software, is it, or MIO, M-I-O, I could not buy European maps for this unit.
Mm.
I decided not to take any risks. I ended up getting my daughter, who lives in England, to purchase a TomTom with English and European maps. The result was a marriage saver.
So thank goodness for that.
Good WAF there. Good wife acceptability factor. My wife and I spent 6 weeks driving around Italy and the south of France with the GPS, just making navigation so easy. How good's that?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, though. If you go to Europe and you hire a car, isn't there a fair chance it's going to have sat-nav built in?
Depends on the car and your budget. You may...
Isn't it? It's a lot more common over there than it is here, though, isn't it?
It's a lot more common, but if you...
Don't look at me. I haven't been there for ages. He has, yeah. Since he's pointing to Dr. Ron. You were in Scotland recently, weren't you?
I was. If you get a small little runaround car the manufacturer of the motor vehicle doesn't have it built in.
Right.
Hang on. Let's go to the chat. There's someone here in the UK. Where is Darren UK? He's
Darren,
up there.
Yep, fill us in.
Tell us about it on the chat. Tell us what's in your car.
So there you go. So Bruce says he would thoroughly recommend GPSs when people are driving overseas. They're useful here, but one can often find one's way around here more quickly using a map. But if you're in a foreign country and you can't speak the language, especially at night and in heavy rain, says Bruce, the GPS is almost indispensable. So thank you for the feedback.
Now, I use a TomTom GPS, and I noticed Warlock on the chat is also saying TomTom for the win.
Ah.
So I recently went to TomTom to try and update the maps, the Australian maps on the TomTom.
Right.
So yours is like a year old or something and you want the next edition of maps, do you?
Yeah. And I wanted that Eastlink, which is a new road we've got in Melbourne.
You got the money to pay to drive on that, have you?
And it's not that bad, depending on which bits you use. And I noticed that they did have maps for other areas. What I found frustrating was I couldn't confirm... And I actually went to the site when Eastlink first opened, and I've been back recently to actually buy the maps. But I couldn't confirm that the map I was buying actually had the road I was interested in on it. There was no way to sort of preview those sorts of features.
You'd want to be able to do that if you were buying it for a particular purpose, wouldn't
you? Yeah, yeah. And I found that very frustrating. And I looked at when did the road open? What map data are they probably basing this on? Yeah, they probably have got it in, and I bought it, and it worked out okay, but...
Yeah. How easy is it to flash your maps and update it?
It's pretty easy, actually.
Just like plug your USB cable into the side of it and put in your laptop and hope for the best?
Well, I've only got experience with the TomTom device, but with TomTom, it comes with an application that you install on your computer called TomTom Home, and you plug your device into that, and it automatically does not only map updates when you pay for them, but it can also do updates to the program of the GPS itself, so to add new features or to improve problems or whatever. So you can actually update the navigation program so that it's got extra features as well. So and it just walks you through it. It makes it really easy for you.
I don't have one of these navigation devices yet. I haven't gone down that path, but let me tell you, there's a lot of cabbies around that'd be lost without it these days, and courier guys and all those sorts of things. But one thing I have tried, as you guys know, I recently invested in a new Nokia mobile phone device.
Yes.
Which has its own form of mapping, Nokia Maps in it. And I thought, oh, I'll give that a go. Yeah. So you signed up and I got my free 7-day trial off them and all that sort of stuff. And it wasn't actually too bad driving around the suburbs.
Okay.
You could put in a destination point, it knew where to go, and you could have, you know...
And your phone tells you that to turn left in 500 metres or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But the thing that annoyed me is that it's an annual fee of a couple of $100. I said, I'll go and buy a TomTom or something like that for that sort of thing, so you don't have to worry about buying annual fees.
Yeah, if your TomTom lasts 18 months, then
What do you get for your $200 a year?
Well, what was it? I can't remember the exact price, but it was greater than 100, less than 200. You can actually open up the device, go to Maps and say, tell me where I am and I want to go from A to B. And it would say, walk 100 metres, drive 100 metres, do this, do that. It does use GPS to do it, which was pretty good, and it probably also uses a bit of mobile broadband, so careful if you're out in the countryside with it. But, yeah, no, I was suitably impressed for a phone to do what it was doing at such a great sort of... You could walk around the city, and it would tell you where to go, walk up here, turn left, turn right, but you wouldn't want to go into a building because you'd lose your satellites, and that'd be the end of you, really, wouldn't it? So...
Yeah, but it's not going to help you navigate inside a building anyway.
No, too right. Dr. Ron, was there any more correspondence?
There was. Kevin says, hi, Andrew and guys.
Thanks. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for your quick response to my questionary antivirus. I'm now trialling your suggestions.
Good.
We had a discussion a few weeks ago about what our preferred antivirus.
When you've tried them all out, get back to us and let us know how you went, because, we might learn something from what you've tried out there.
Absolutely. If one is allowed to have two thoughts so quick, I have another thought, says Kevin, and the team may be able to help me understand. Why is it with laptop computers these days, you still have to carry around the great black box that joins your laptop and the 240-volt power socket? In this day and age, could manufacturers make a simple cord to go from PowerPoint to laptop, thus eliminating the need for this big oblong power box?
Well, then you've got to stick something else, you know, and it defeats the purpose of
thanks again
sleek and slim, doesn't it?
The idea of that is to make the laptop itself smaller and lighter. There's inherent limitations in...
Laptops are supposed to be battery-operated, aren't they?
That's right.
The whole thing behind them, except if you're sitting like we are in the studio for 2 hours.
And that device that converts, you know, your mains voltage, 230 volts AC, into probably 18 volts DC or something for your computer, there's physical limitations. The laws of physics say you can't make it smaller than it is. So you have to have something that big and that heavy in the notebook if you don't want to have that as a separate device. The advantage is, and this is what a lot of people do, is they have one power pack sitting on their desk at home, one power pack sitting on their desk at work, and if they're anywhere else, it runs off the batteries.
Oh, I do that.
You
works well.
And you don't carry a power pack with you.
That's right. That's right. It gives you a good 2 hours out in the field. Just before Danger Mouse scrolls off my screen here, he says, my dad's favourite is the John Cleese voice. Have you guys heard the John Cleese voice for the TomTom?
Oh, a long time ago, I think.
I was doing a thing on ABC Radio probably last year when this came out, and I've got a few audio grabs off. I was trying to bring it in one night so everyone can hear it, but he goes along the lines of, if you look outside your window now and the people have got pointy heads, that means you're going too fast. In the traditional John Cleese manner and all that sort of stuff. Very, very funny stuff. So, yeah, anyway, a lot of other little plugins you can get for your Navmans and Garmins.
We should do a Tech Talk radio voice, custom voice for the TomTom.
Oh, heaven forbid.
Oh, sorry. Maybe not.
That's a good idea in the time. Anything else, Dr. Ron? Sorry.
No, that's all the correspondence for this week, Andrew. Okay. So if you'd like to send us a message, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
We have had a couple of other interesting questions during the course of the week too from a few people, actually, about the new onset of the digital radio, DAB.
Oh, yes, which was what we talked about last week in the correspondence.
Yep. We did. We're in the throes of organising, hopefully, the head of ABC Radio's digital broadcasting to have a chat with us in the next little bit.
Terrific.
And we also have an interview which Jeff Gates, our US colleague, has sent to us, all about digital audio broadcasting in the US. So we're going to have a bit of an interesting night, hopefully, all things going according to plan. So stay tuned.
It's been a while since we've heard from Jeff Gates. He sent some stuff in a long while ago.
He called into the country the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he came and had a coffee.
Oh, fantastic.
He said, g'day, I'm Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Excellent.
And we sat up the road and he had a friend who was travelling the world, left the home country and off he went and came here to Australia.
Cool.
So, right.
Can I say hello to a new podcast listener?
Absolutely.
My mum, this week, will be listening to the show for the first time as the podcast on her new iPod.
Terrific. She's got a new iPod.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just arrived today in a box from from the courier company.
Oh, okay.
So, she used to listen on the radio, but it got to be a bit late at night and she'd fall asleep towards the end when the music was playing.
It's a bit like that with us, isn't it?
So, as of this week... She set up iTunes on the weekend before her iPod had even arrived.
Right.
Because she's so excited about getting this new toy. So iTunes will be automatically downloading the podcast for her and she'll be listening to it on her iPod.
Fantastic.
Can I tell you a funny story too, while we're talking about mothers?
Yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Graham.
I got a call from mine today.
Yeah.
Oh, the wireless network hasn't been working for days. Rah, 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 rah.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, there's another machine in the household on a wireless network. Is that one working? Yes. Process of elimination.
Mm.
There's a switch on the front when you shut the cover. You didn't knock that by any chance. Oh, thank you, dear. Goodbye. Clog.
Yes.
That's the level of tech support I do these days.
I had a similar call from a customer today with the same problem. Yeah, they turned off that little switch, wireless switch on your laptop that switches off all the radios. Yeah.
Absolutely. So everyone's saying hi, Mum, in the chat now, which is really good. Should we get to the rundown?
Mine's function F2.
What is?
Switch off wireless.
Is it?
Yeah.
It
took me have a little switch.
Took me 4 hours one
is
day.
Is this on the
not a mechanical switch. This is on my PC. Yeah. Okay. Function F2. I won't do it, but...
How's that going?
It's got a special icon on the F2 button. Hang on, what do you mean it took you? How long did you take?
I was looking for a mechanical switch. I was turning it over.
It's got the drawing on the
left. I know, but I don't look at the instructions. I was looking under the battery and up the side.
Now, you had a conundrum during the course of the week that you were talking to me about, Dr. Ron, because you've gone into this television thing here in the studio in a big way.
Right.
You came up to me and you said, what have we got all these little cameras for? We've got a camera in each and every laptop. Is there a way of actually getting them all to talk together so we can stream them? Did you come up with a solution, or maybe some of our listeners might be able to
help? I haven't come up with a solution yet. What I'm wanting to do is we've got little cameras in the laptops that we use here, and it occurred to me that rather than duplicate all of those cameras, have a little application that I can install on each of the laptops, and that can stream the video to a server application, which runs on my laptop, for example.
Yep.
And then that appears as a video device. And I can then use that to push the video up to Ustream or a video distribution site.
Someone must have done it somewhere. That's
but
the great thing about
if I let you install that on my machine, then you might be able to spy on me when I'm at home.
I will spy on you when you're at home.
Yeah,
there's no ifs, buts, or maybes about it. And I don't have to spy on you. I will stream you to Ustream.
And then I'll have to stick a sticker over my webcam. Actually, I've got a solution here. I've got a notebook here that hasn't got a webcam in it. So
there you go. Yep, problem solved.
Yep. Yes. No, you won't be able to spy on me.
If anyone's got any suggestions, and I've put a post on the help section of our forum. So if you want to discuss that, a little project that we have, or if you've got any suggestions, then log on there and post a comment for us.
Yeah. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. That'll do it too when we're live. ATUG. Concerned about the Vodafone and Hutchison merger. We're on the rundown now.
Oh, good. Here we
the,
are.
Australian Telecommunications Users Group.
That's them. Has voiced concerns over the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission that the proposed Hutchison-Vodafone merger, which, what are they calling? VHU or UHV or something? I can't even remember now. Is going to reduce competitive pressure. And the ACCC's worried about it too. And they've been asked for a comment on the statement of issue for the Vodafone-Hutchison merger. And it's raised concerns over the potential loss of competition. Also, the big issue over spectrum, because apparently this new organisation will have an unfair advantage when it comes to radio spectrum allocation in Australia, more so than Optus, more so than Telstra.
Why will I have an unfair advantage?
Because they've got more spectrum.
Yeah, but why is it unfair? Bought it. They've paid for it at auction.
Yeah, but it's like getting into the NBN bed. You can only own 15% of the total amount. Apparently that's not fair, and that's what the ACCC are having a look at.
Oh.
So, anyway, Hutchison 3. That'll be interesting to see what happens. That's probably... How many years off do you reckon that'll be? 2 years before that even gets close to being the marriage is consummated?
No idea.
Who? Hutchison 3 and
Vodafone.
Vodafone. Well, it's strange
VHA
that
whatever they call themselves.
Three are still doing deals with Telstra, which I find curious, although...
But three is 49% owned by Telstra. If I'm not mistaken. Well,
they're probably looking at it short term. Like this is something that... But they know that they need now and they're going to be doing now, and whatever eventuates in 2 or 3 years' time, then you know that's probably a long way off for them. So,
but even when they merge with Vodafone, they'll still need to roam off the other networks, won't they?
One would think.
Mm.
But who knows?
Mm.
ATUG have said Hutchison has a much better rate for roaming than either Telstra or Optus. 50 cents a meg, I think it is at the moment, on 3. I don't know what it is on the other carriers. I haven't tried. If they roam, that is.
Yes,
I know
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What
I don't
we
know
work
what their
out
excesses
it?
Are.
$500 a gigabyte or something?
Oh, yeah. That's where they make their money, isn't it? It's like SMS. If you're talking about dollar per kilobyte or something like that, SMS was never too good. So, anyway, there you go. A bit of a concern over that merger, which I guess we'll probably see more of in the not-too-distant future.
Since I got an HSDPA handset, which is one of the new high-speed data handsets, on the 3 network, I found that I haven't been roaming as much as I used to.
Haven't you? Been staying home.
On the old first generation 3G, if that's...
I wonder if HSDPA is the difference, or whether it's just that your handset has better radios in it.
Well, that's possible, because it's a much newer handset.
Yeah, better radios, better antenna built in, whatever it might happen to be, yeah.
I used to get pinged those big data charges for roaming on other people's networks, but I haven't seen them for the last few months.
Oh, good. Hey, answer me this. HSDPA is a technology. Is that on a GSM handset?
On a GSM...
Is GSM the same as HSDPA?
Depends how you define GSM.
I don't know, but I've been watching a lot of...
HSDPA is a third generation phone network.
The reason why I ask is I was sitting there pondering life as you do when an Optus ad went across the television the other night. And as part of their one of their packages, they say it includes calls to GSM mobiles. I'm going, why are they specifying GSM mobiles? Is it because an HSDPA mobile isn't GSM, which is the new third generation handset?
This was Optus, was it?
Yeah.
No, I think it's more a case of Optus marketing not knowing what they're doing and trying to sound clever.
Okay,
is that what it is? GSM, to me whatsoever.
GSM means something and HSDPA means something, but they don't necessarily...
Yeah, HSDPA is a protocol.
They're not comparable things, no.
No.
And GSM is a technology. Oh, God. It's a bit like free television, isn't it? We're going to talk about that later. Adam's going to be in for a bit, but...
It's like saying that, oh, if you sign up to this plan, we'll let you call overseas numbers as well, or... Oh, well, it's not even really like saying that. It's
there
just
go.
A stupid thing to say, isn't it?
Going on the chat at the moment, they're saying HSDPA is 3G, GSM is 2G, I think, laughing out loud.
Yeah.
Go Swanee. Mm.
Well, that's right.
Confusion reigns supreme. If Mark was here, he'd know, but he's in the United States building 4G. As you do.
The first generation of 3G, it gets very confusing very quickly, doesn't it?
You see, what we call 3G is part of GSM, but it's not what we call GSM, because what we call GSM is 2G. But what we call 3G is also part of CDMA, but we don't call it CDMA either. It's WCDMA.
Exactly. That's right. Wideband code division multiple access.
That's the first.
So some of these terms, the way we use them is not quite technically what they mean. It's very confusing.
So my question is, are some of the telcos misleading us by claiming that it's part of a plan to another GSM? And you ring Dr. Ron and he's on a wideband CDMA, which is not GSM. Ah, oh, look, it's all too confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's possibly... They're probably just as confused as we are.
Absolutely.
I think in this case, it might not be malicious.
I think we need to move on.
Move on.
My brain hurts.
I know, exactly. Kogan, you remember him? He's the man who likes... He was bringing television sets. I think Adam had a chat to him recently.
Oh, yes.
Bad boy Kogan.
Bad boy Kogan. Yeah. The ACCC's got stuck into him at the moment because he's been doing price comparisons and things which aren't price comparable.
Ah.
He would be saying that, you know...
this is like, say, $400. Was this now that? When it wasn't ever that.
Yes.
That's illegal, isn't it?
Yes, you're only, right.
Oh, sorry.
This is the point of the story.
Keep up, Dr. Ron.
So you're only allowed to do a price comparison with the same product, as far as I was concerned.
With the same product, and only if it's actually been sold in significant quantities at that price.
Yeah.
So you can't just sell one at the big price and then...
So what he was doing was comparing one of his television sets with one of the other manufacturers, be it Sony, or Panasonic, or whoever it is like that, and saying... ours is considerably cheaper, say 40% or 50% off the retail price, which you can't do because the technologies are completely different. The after-sale service, the warranties, all that sort of stuff is a different... You can't
compare. Part of what you pay for is the brand name and the reputation with some of the big brands.
Yeah.
Some of the brands patented proprietary technologies built in that you pay a little bit extra for as well.
Absolutely. Anyway, so Ruslan Kogan went off to see Mr. ACCC, and the result was... an undertaking not to advertise its products at a discounted...
undertaking.
Yeah, an undertaking not to advertise its products.
A slap on the wrist with a wet tram ticket.
If you're in Melbourne. I don't make tram tickets anymore. You're distracting me. Shush.
Sorry.
Kogan has undertaken not to advertise its products at a discount unless that product has previously been advertised or sold in reasonable quantities at a higher price for a reasonable amount of time. Not advertising savings unless it states how they are calculated. There you go. So exactly what you were saying there, Graham.
Thank you.
Exactly. So, yes, good. the National Broadband Network regional backhaul starting to be built in September. They're fast-tracking that. That'll be interesting to see what happens.
Fast-tracking rural areas. That's good. It's good
as
to
your
know.
Backhaul.
Yeah, well, time will tell.
And the backhaul is the bit of cable that runs between basically suburb to suburb, town to town.
Yep.
And once they start building that infrastructure, well, then all I need to do is get into telephone exchanges and run it out to the streets so we can use it.
Won't that be good? You've got to do all of that, yeah.
So Mr. Conroy's on the bandwagon doing all that sort of stuff at the moment.
Does it say where they're doing first, Andrew? Or?
That's a very good question. Tassie's obviously been talked about in the mainstream, but I don't know whether they've put anything further down from Tassie apart from that. And as long as you've got a township of over 1,000 people, you're laughing. You'll get all the good stuff coming into you in the not-too-distant. But, yeah, obviously they're going to start. They're going to start rolling out this fibre between all the places. Good thing.
Good stuff. Yeah, definitely. Has to be done. It's got to be done. It's got to start somewhere.
Too right. Also, whilst talking about the Honourable Stephen Conroy... Haven't seen him in the media of late. I think he's gone underground for a bit. He pops up for a while. I saw his old predecessor, Conan the Barbarian. What's her name? Senator Coonan.
Coonan the Barbarian. Where did that come from?
She speaks highly of you. No. She's a lovely lady. She's the opposition spokesperson for finance or something now.
Yes.
Just to change the portfolio a little bit.
It's a complete change.
Yeah. No. She was on talking, I think, on Q&A the other night. I saw her, which was a bit of a laugh. Anyway, the Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, Mr. Stephen Conroy, has announced a consultation for the future of mobile phone and wireless broadband licences. Just when you thought it was safe to go out and, you know, look at mobile phone licensing, which is what the telcos would be doing.
Yep.
Australia has been a world leader in wireless communications, and according to him, we need to plan ahead to retain our leadership. Mobile phones and wireless broadband have changed people's lives, and it's important that the industry has a chance or is best placed to develop future services. So he's not only looking at the fibre to the household and to the national broadband network, he's also now turning his attention to radio spectrum, which is in finite supply and things like that. So
he must have been as savage as 10 men when he didn't get to make the announcement about the NBN. He was standing very much second place to K-Rudd when that announcement was made.
Yep.
Mm. Yep. Now, he has been quiet, hasn't he?
He has of late. But the government's discussion paper examines a range of issues, and it's looking for licensing issues and things like that. In the 800, which is the 800 megawatts, so that's the lowest of mobile phone frequencies, 1.8 gig, 2.1 gig, which is all mobile phone frequencies.
Yep.
2.3 and 3.4 gig, which is wireless. It's in those sort of spectrum-y areas. So they're looking to sort of, you know, refine things a little bit in those areas. So good on you, Mr. Conroy. I wonder if he knows much more about that or whether that's all from his advisors. Because there's stories about the advisors. None have been substantiated, so we can't repeat any of them here. But I wonder where he's getting all of his advice from.
You'll tell me later.
I wonder if he listens to us. Bet he does. But anyway, that's another story.
Now, someone just pointed out in the chat that there's actually light shining under Bass Strait.
There is. Hasn't that started, isn't it?
If I
recall. I did read something about that today. I don't know whether I've
got sort of just as of light, today. Graham.
Yeah, the power companies. Link. Yeah, Basslink has started.
Now, the bit of background is that this is a power cable to get electricity between Victoria and Tasmania.
But some bright
spark. when they laid the cable, they put some fibre optic cable in the little bundle as well that goes under the sea, under Bass Strait. And today, they've actually got a light to shine from one end to the other.
So that wasn't being used up until today?
It hasn't been used up until today.
Because the electricity provider wasn't a registered telecommunications provider.
Yep,
they could do electricity, but they couldn't do data.
Yep, and you have to be a carrier. You have to have a carrier's license to be able to do
this. Didn't we talk about this last week? Not about these guys in particular, but having a carrier's license and running a bit of blue cable over the neighbour's fence?
Yeah, did we talk about that on air or off air?
That was off air. Oh, was it?
It was off air after the show.
Sorry, the show continues, doesn't it?
That was Tech Talk up late.
So they've got their regulatory things resolved, and they've been setting up the technology now, and they've actually got the first 10 gigabits per second channel running between Loy Yang in Victoria and Georgetown in Tasmania. So
10
gigabits per second. And apparently that's only one channel that's going to be available as they ramp it up and put more equipment on and so on. So
absolutely. Bring it on.
Absolutely.
Tassie's
not in use. No one's actually sending any data through it yet. It's all in testing, but it's lit up and working. So
Tassie's been in the backwater for some time when it comes to high-speed broadband. So good on you,
yep,
Tassie.
A lot of the internet providers...
faster than the rest of the country.
That's right. A lot of the internet providers down there won't provide ADSL2 services because they can't get the back channel, the backhaul, like you were saying before, cheap enough. And this will introduce competition into that market where it's only been Telstra in the past.
Some companies got a monopolistic approach down that part of the world. And
yeah, not mentioning any Telstras
in particular. No, don't mention any phone. No names, no backdrop. Just briefly, before we go to the break, because we're running over already, Microsoft's first quarterly profit fall in 23 years. Google happened last week, and it's Microsoft's turn this week. Microsoft says its quarterly review revenue fell from the previous year for the first time in 23 years, which its most profit selling is the Windows operating system and business software such as Office. So they're still the biggest sellers for them, but times are tough.
Now just to make it times clear, this isn't that Microsoft are losing money or anything like that. It's just that they're not making quite
not
as much
as
money
much.
As they were.
People are holding off. It's a recession, the GFC.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, this is like the sky is falling, but yes.
No, it's
they're
just...
They're still making money. They're just not quite making as much money as they were before.
Yeah, that's in decline, which is just a blip on the radar for probably Microsoft. Now, I mean, other things, Dr. Ron, you mentioned it before. Don't shake the baby.
Don't shake the baby.
Kick the baby.
Apple has apologized.
Don't kick the baby.
Apple has apologised after a deeply offensive game for the iPhone called the Baby Shaker, and it was approved for sale on the company's online store. Now, what I want to know is how does it get through the online store when it's a deeply offensive game? Like, Apple is so rigid when it comes to putting things in their online store. You know, you have to almost jump hurdles, DNA swap, well, yeah, everything.
And somehow it's got through.
And somehow this game has got through. How did it get through?
Deeply offensive is subjective. Okay?
Because, oh, come on, Graham. Shaking babies?
But you're not actually shaking a baby. You're shaking your iPhone.
But it's the theory behind it. It's the fact that, well, I guess you could say it's like those, you know, first-person shooter games, really, isn't it?
Well, that's right. You're not actually shooting anybody. You're just pressing buttons on your computer.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, to somebody this was a funny joke. To somebody else this was deeply offensive. Can kind of see both sides of the argument. Mike, Apple were a little bit, probably a little bit careless in letting it through, but...
They've apologised and they've removed
it
from the App Store.
That'll make it even more popular, won't it? Some of the underground app stores, application things and all that sort of stuff?
Potentially.
Speaking of Apple, they got charged US $19 million for a patent infringement during the course of the week.
Oh, what patent?
Apple has been found guilty of patent infringement and charged in a Texas court, and it was for the Californian-based chip manufacturer OPTI Inc., which was to do with data transfer methods, officially called predictive snooping and caching memory of a master-initiated access. I'm not quite sure what that means, but data snooping. So they've obviously nicked something from a chip manufacturer and put it in theirs without paying for the right to do so. And they got found guilty in a US court. $19 million. Just a drop in the ocean. Sell a few more iPods.
There you go. What was the other patent thing news that was about?
The pod thing.
No, that was the CSIRO
issue.
Yeah.
Was that one too.
Did we talk about that earlier?
We're going to talk about it later, I think, Andrew.
Sorry. If it's in the rundown, who knows?
Oh, all right.
Speaking of, time for a break. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating.
Very.
Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
My old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
I smoke. That's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Don't breathe this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Before we went to the break, the CSIRO won a bit of a gong.
We mentioned that, didn't we?
We did.
We started to talk about it.
It's about Wi-Fi, isn't it? Wireless access. And I think you made a remark, Dr. Graham, about... we'll be paying more for our Wi-Fi very shortly.
Yeah, it's a bit of a win for the CSIRO, who, of course, did all the research and all the basic, the hard yards to figure out how to make it all work. But, yeah, all the Wi-Fi wireless networking devices on 802.11 standards are based on work done by the CSIRO, and they went after all the various companies in the, all the big ones. Including Dr. Ron, HP and Cisco.
Cisco. I had a list here somewhere. Dell, Toshiba, even Microsoft didn't get away unscathed.
There you go. For, using this Wi-Fi technology that the CSIRO in Australia has a patent on.
Very good.
So,
well done, CSIRO, Australian company.
What that will do, it'll probably make Wi-Fi stuff just a tiny fraction more expensive. It probably won't make a huge impact. It'll make the companies pay for the people who did the basic research, and it'll probably fund CSIRO to do something new and exciting in the future as well.
Absolutely.
With a bit of luck.
The Deputy Chief Executive of Operations, Mr. Mike Whelan, and he said that the CSIRO obviously was very pleased with the outcome, and that the compensation payments, Graham, and also ongoing royalties, which manufacturers have to pay, they're going to be reinvested to further research, technological research.
Excellent.
Yeah.
During the course of the week, I, as some of you may or may not be aware, I work in the broadcasting industry from a television point of view. I was having lunch with one of my good supplier friends down the road the other day. We were discussing the state of television in this country, which is very confusing. there's three groups of individuals. There's the actual broadcasters themselves, the people that are being, Freeview are sort of trying to coerce into doing certain things. Then there's the manufacturers that sit between the consumers and the broadcasters who have no idea what to make because no one knows what the hell's going on. And then you have the poor old consumer at the other end who says, I'm getting ads by the government to say go digital, but I go into a shop and they don't know anything and there's stickers that say, you know, HDV or digital TV ready or high definition ready. Even my father-in-law rang me the other day and says, what does HD ready mean on a Bravia?
It means it hasn't got high definition in it.
Exactly right. It means you need a set-top box to see HD in it. He goes, what's the point of that? I thought it's digital. Anyway, my point is that there's a whole heap of confusion right from one end of the industry to the other end of the industry. And in the middle of it is really the poor old consumer. Like, even my parents decided they wanted to buy a set-top box. The buying criteria was a high-definition, single-tuner PVR with a hard drive in it, around about 160, whatever good-size hard drive they could do.
PVR is a personal video recorder.
That's right.
It's the modern replacement for the old VHS machine.
That's right. So that was the buying criteria. One tuner, high definition, and a big-size hard drive in it. An HDMI, obviously, to go into the TV.
Yep.
Do you think you can get anything like that in Australia? No, you can't.
Really?
No, not in that
seems
sort of
like
configuration.
A basic sort of thing to want.
It is. It is a basic sort of a thing to want. And you can go and get two tuners and a Sony thing, but it's $1,500.
Right.
Or you can go the other end of the thing, other end of the scale, where it's standard definition, and it's about $150 or $400 or $300. Right. You know, in that sort of. But there's nothing in the middle of the road because these days you buy your big television set, which has a tuner in it. You don't need a second tuner, you know, unless you really want to. You want to have three tuners in your system for whatever reason. I don't know why, but obviously unless you watch a lot of television.
Yeah, so you can have picture-in-picture, lots of pictures-in-pictures.
Come on, Graham. Have you ever watched television like that?
Well, no, because...
No, exactly.
Because, A, my TV antenna's broken and I just can't be bothered fixing it. It's easier to download the programs.
You would watch you would watch TV like that, though, if you
guilty,
could.
Your Honour.
And whenever I watch TV, I'm using my computer at the same time, so I don't need picture-in-picture because the other picture's on my computer.
Okay. Anyway, free TV, let's go back to the broadcasters for a moment.
Yes.
As Adam said in his View from the Couch last week, they're trying to introduce this MHEG 5, not MPEG, MHEG, which is an interactive version.
It's not a way of encoding the video. It's a way of adding all the controls and interactive stuff and press the red button and that stuff.
Exactly, which is obviously the base of the UK's free TV.
Right.
And I believe Hong Kongians have taken an interest in it, and the Kiwis have also got a bit of an interest in it as well. But
okay.
The UK has well and truly embraced, I think they're up to version 6. But the manufacturers here in Australia have no idea, really, of what's going on. Now, this week we've had the revelation, or more the point, the result, that you remember the Ice TV scenario when Channel 9 took Ice TV to the court over...
Because they said their program guide, knowing what program was going to be on when... was copyright and no one else could publish it.
Yeah.
And there was a decision made in Ice TV's favour, wasn't there?
There was. Yeah. There was indeed. Anyway, just to cut a long story short, Adam's going to tell us all about it in just a sec. But the bottom line is that, you know, this was a landmark decision based on Australian television, because if the networks could control the electronic program guide, then we're all history, really, because only their certified devices could actually use the EPG as such. But anyway... Mm. The High Court found in favour of Ice TV versus Channel 9.
You see, that's a shock, you see, because I would have thought it would be easily proven that the Channel 9 television guide would be a work of fiction because it bears absolutely no relation to what time the programs start.
You're a Star Trek Trekkian from way back. I can obviously tell. Anyway, here's Adam's View from the Couch for this week, and he'll tell us a little bit more about what's going on with free TV, Ice TV, all those sorts of things.
By crushing the Nine Network's efforts to block Ice TV's online TV guide, the High Court has also struck a blow against the broadcaster's efforts to control viewers. Despite all the hype, the Freeview digital television campaign is primarily about convincing people to use personal video recorders which don't allow ad skipping. The free-to-air broadcasters fear services such as Ice TV because they provide a full electronic program guide to devices which do allow ad skipping, such as PVRs from the likes of Topfield and BeyondWiz, along with computer-based recorders. Now, Ice TV does not allow you to skip ads, something the mainstream media still struggles to understand. Ice TV only makes it more practical to use those PVRs which do allow ad skipping. Rather than attack the large foreign makers of ad-skipping PVRs, Nine found it easier to attack a small local EPG provider. Nine timed its legal challenge in 2006 to come just days before Ice TV was due to float on the stock exchange, forcing Ice TV to scuttle the float and hand back checks to investors. Nine could regret this when it comes time for the court to award damages. Now, when Ice TV began back in 2005, Australia's networks were only supplying Now and Next EPG data with their broadcast signal. These days, the networks offer a full 7-day EPG, but part of Freeview's FUD campaign has been to scare people into thinking they'll need to buy gear with a Freeview logo on it in order to view the EPG. Now, when I pressed Freeview's chief executive Robin Parks on this issue, she conceded that the Freeview EPG will be nothing but the standard EPG with a fancy interface. Eventually, Parks also conceded that around half of the Freeview branded devices to go on sale in May will be Phase 1 boxes, which can't actually use this fancy MHEC-5 based interface anyway. Now, had Nine defeated Ice TV and legally locked away the EPG data, Freeview could have gradually phased out the free-to-air EPG or just crippled it, forcing people to buy a Freeview box if they wanted to access the EPG. Now that Ice TV has won the right to exist, Freeview will have to maintain the free-to-air EPG lest it force more viewers into the arms of Ice TV or other third-party EPG providers. The High Court judgment leaves the door open for legitimate Ice TV competitors to spring up. While the court agrees that Nine does hold copyright over the TV schedule as a whole, a close read of the judgment indicates that basic individual facts, such as the title and start times of programs, should not be counted when considering if a service such as ITV is copying a, quote, substantial part of the guide. This doesn't open the floodgates for everyone to copy and paste each day's guide to create their own EPG service, but it does mean that Ice TV and others are entitled to produce EPGs as long as they follow the correct procedures. The Freeview marketing blitzkrieg is about to go into overdrive, but thanks to Ice TV's victory, the broadcasters are losing their grip on Australia's lounge room.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Losing their grip. I think they've lost a lot of other things. They're actually, you know, Channel 7 put up that, what was that program the other night they put up for download before it went to air?
Yes. What possessed them? First episode of Heroes, the first of the new season of Heroes. Yeah.
Is that any good? I don't watch that sort of stuff.
I don't watch that show either.
Not my kettle of fish, but
no.
The other thing, it's slightly off topic, but something I've just asked Adam Turner a question about in our chat room. Which of the PVR units actually has an Ethernet connection, a network connection? And I think Adam's saying BeyondWiz and one of the top field models he
But what
seems
can
to
you
think.
Do up the Ethernet? Can you suck files off a hard drive?
Well, you'd be able to do, ideally, be able to do everything. You'd be able to stream video from other servers. You would be able to... you could look browse the internet, you could map up drives, and you could view stuff that you downloaded on other machines. You could do all sorts of things like that. But I think I went into a consumer electronics store here fairly recently, within the last couple of weeks, a big yellow and black one, and I asked the salesman there which of his PVRs had Ethernet connections and network connections. He looked at me like I had two heads. So what do you want that for? God, why wouldn't you want it? But and the very expensive ones, like the top field BeyondWiz ones, are around about the $1,000 mark at the moment. I think they actually have Wi-Fi built in, and Wi-Fi is good. That's a start. But we want a 100 megabits per second Ethernet port as well.
Mm, definitely,
I think
cable's good for those sort of things. Wireless is the problem with wireless is that it gets interrupted from time to time.
Yeah, and it's slow. You know, 22 megabits per second or 54 megabits per second or whatever it is that you're running at home.
Do you use an EPG at all, Dr. Ron, to record things on your... Because you've got a media station, the Microsoft media station.
No.
Why?
We don't watch TV. We watch television. We don't watch
sad
off
reality,
air.
Really,
well,
isn't
it? Well, it is. It's a very sad reality. We watch the television, but we don't watch what comes off air. We watch things that we buy DVDs. We watch stuff that's streamed live off the internet. Maybe we watch the news off free-to-air at night time, and there's one or two...
That's the only program that starts on time.
Well, it is, because the
You can actually set your watch by the opening
Yes.
Graphic of a new service.
Because the ratings Funny depend on it that. So highly.
No, because the relays depend on it so highly.
Exactly.
Is that the reason?
That's the reason.
Goodness me. Yeah, no, it's interesting that I actually used the PVR in my set-top box the other night, I think for the first time ever. I said, this has got to work. I've got to be able to do this somehow. And I made the text go from blue to red, and I thought, oh, there's a sign. And it actually recorded, but admittedly it was the ABC, so it was good. I got a bit of an outgoing and a bit of the next program coming okay. in. So it actually gave me a bit of headroom because I run promos in the middle, and the yeah. PVR, the EPG, and it actually did the job quite well. So I was happy with that. But I do hear that there are a lot of issues, especially on the commercial channels with PVR, because it just moved their programs.
Yes.
The time starts, as you were getting frustrated with earlier on, Graham.
And in other markets, the station would update the electronic program guide to show the actual start time and finish time of the program. So if the program's going to start at 8:32 instead of 8:30, they would update that in the EPG when it's going to when they're running a couple of minutes late. And that way your PVR would follow that.
But, one would hope, but they don't do that, do
but
they?
They don't do that here, no.
No.
No, you hit the I button on your remote control and it still shows you what program's scheduled to be on rather than what program actually is on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go. Good news for ICE TV. And I think that can be good news for everybody in general, that they're not going to be able to lock away, or Free TV is not going to be able to lock away a copyright on a program guide.
Yes, I think that is a good thing.
A victory for common sense?
I think so. I think so. Now we've got to get the technology right between the stations and the homes, and we'll be cooking with gas. So watch this space.
Mm.
All right, we'll go to a break, and we're going to come back with Microsoft in a minute about their new blue technology, which they're using in their new pointing devices. But before then, just a little bit more about Apple. Apple's App Store, 1 billion downloads. That's a lot of applications. I wonder how many baby shakers were in part of that billion that came down. JD's not here tonight. He's swanning around at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, I believe.
Probably had a truckload of downloads of that baby shaker before it got taken down. Yeah.
But the App Store's been logged as, it's 1 billionth download in 10 months. Has the App Store only been going 10 months?
Something like that, yeah.
Really? Okay, well, there you go. So that's a lot of applications.
In the first quarter of this year, Apple reported a 15% increase in sales and $1.7 billion in profits. So that means that despite the downturn that you said Microsoft was experiencing, and last week we're talking about Google experiencing difficulties as well.
Well, Apple's
Apple, not. Through their apps, not only through their App Store, but also through sales of iPods and iPhones and selling music through iTunes. Well, that's right. They've got this diversity.
3.8 million iPhones sold in the last quarter alone. 3.8 million.
It's not bad. Your mum's one of them, Graham.
Yes.
I know an iPhone user, buyer, person.
Don't look at me.
It was really funny, actually. She walked into the office and said, look what I bought. And we all looked at her and then went back to our work. She said, oh, I'm excited about this. I said, oh, good. I'm happy for you. Happy. 11 million iPods sold in a quarter. So it's 3.8 million iPhones, 11 million iPods. But Mac sales were down 3%. Oh, well, that's life. But anyway, I think Mac is very well positioned to weather this downturn purely because of their diversification across all sorts of things.
Still punching out the profits, though. Shareholders will be happy. $1.7 billion in a quarter.
Steve's back in June, too. It's a bit like being at work. You remember when you're at work and the boss went away for a while? Everyone goes, yeah, long coffee breaks.
Do you think that's what it's like down at Apple?
Lunchtimes. Cupertino. Don't know. But anyway, Steve's back on deck in June, so watch out, everybody. That'll be the end of it. We'll put a rocket up things and it'll shake things up a little bit more. So, anyway. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan in this evening. Come and visit us on our chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. There's a plethora of people there tonight, including Adam Turner. You can come along and have a chat to him. He's logged in at the moment. So, join the group. It'll be good. Now, coming up after the break, we're going to talk about Microsoft and BlueTrack. You don't know what it is yet, do you?
I don't know. I'm eager to learn all about it.
Hang around and find out.
You did.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
We've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No, 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 no.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one weird technology radio show.
You are indeed. Welcome back, Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham in this evening. Welcome aboard. Now, Dr. Ron, you got a mouse with your laptop? Do you use a mouse these days?
Don't use a mouse. Not with the netbooks, no.
Why not? How do you do it? You use your digit, do you?
I use my digit and I slide it over the little touchy pad thing.
Really?
Yeah.
But is there a reason why you don't use a mouse? Because they're fraught with, failures?
Oh, you've just got to lug it around and plug it in. There's no PS2 ports on these things. I suppose I could use a USB mouse or I could use a wireless mouse. But
what do you use at home?
Well, I have a normal PS2 mouse connected to my computer.
Use a mouse.
I use a mouse.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a pen user. I use Wacom.
You are. You use a stylus.
I do.
Which I've never been able to get the hang of, but I've never
Why
really...
not? What do you write with when you're writing your reports at work?
This
do you
is
use
true.
A mouse or do you use a pen?
No, I use a pen.
Well,
you're
how
right.
How come you can't use
Why
a pen?
Why can't I use a stylus?
I've do you tried, use a mouse?
But you use the pen as a mouse, and that confuses me.
Do you... Yeah, you use it for things that we would do mouse operations with, like clicking on menus and...
Absolutely. Just touch the pad. It's like one touch is a click and right-click on the side of the pen. And you can, it's pressure sensitive, so when you're drawing in Photoshop.
If one touch is a click, then how do you know where to click on to hit the edit menu?
Well, you just move your cursor, move the pen over the edit thing, because it's like your tablet represents your screen.
So, okay, so you can have the pen on the tablet.
Yeah.
And you, okay, and a click, you mean lift it up and put it down again?
Just touch the tablet, just a light touch is a click.
Yeah, but if, I don't understand. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a simple concept. It's
but if
just
you pick the stylus up and you want to move it to the top of the screen, like you do with a mouse, you quickly whoosh it up to the top of the screen to click on the edit menu.
Let's get away from the pen thing. You guys are having real problems
menu.
With this.
Yeah.
No, because the screen represents the tablet.
Yeah.
So the top of the tablet is the top of the screen, the bottom of the tablet is the bottom of the screen, and none of the two shall meet.
But somewhere in the middle is the edit menu, and you don't know quite where it is.
Oh, for goodness sakes. I'll show you later off air.
All right.
Now, you guys obviously are prime candidates for mice, mouses, mices, whatever you want to call them. Now, the traditional mouse has always had problems. You know, remember the first ones used to get those little balls?
Yeah.
And they used to get full of dirt and muck and all sorts of things like
I used to spend 2/3 of my life cleaning people's mices for them, and then they think, oh, my computer works much better now.
Yeah, you spit up the computer.
The thing that always amazed me is where did that fluff come from? Because it was never on your desktop.
No.
It was naval fluff.
Is that what it
comes
was?
Comes from the same place, yes. Ultimate
Blue
universe.
Fluff
yes.
that comes, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, so that was
you know how stuff goes into a black hole and never comes out again?
Yeah, pens
it,
do
it,
that.
Yeah, it comes out as it gets transformed by the universe into naval fluff and things on your mouse. And
all right. Yeah. Well, they did away with the ball after a while, which I thought was great because you could nick those off people's mouses and they'd go, why doesn't my mouse work? And then you give them back their ball later on. But anyway, then they went to the infrared things with the reflective, off the desktop type sort of stuff. But the problem with those were shiny surfaces. Have you ever tried using an infrared mouse or, the little LED mouses, which...
Yeah, they're not infrared. They're just red.
Yeah, just red. Yeah, you're right, actually. Some talk infrared-ly, but yeah, red mouse. And they don't work on shiny surfaces. So
you have
to hold a piece of paper down there on the bench
and they don't
squiggle
work on some screen printed surfaces. Sometimes you get a surface that's screen printed and the screen printing is the same distance as the resolution of the scanning device. So it goes completely burko. It's really funny.
It does. Very, very frustrating.
Yes.
And then at the same time, if you're a laptop user, have you ever tried using a mouse on a boardroom table? A nice bit of polished timber, or on the kitchen bench at home, which has got the nice
technician.
Surface.
I don't use my mouse in the boardroom.
But you are a technician. Well, when you're sitting at home fixing someone's thing, you've remoted in, you're on the kitchen bench. Where's the mouse?
On the
laminate?
Yeah.
Does it work?
Depends, exactly. On the surface,
But,
I find the best mouse mat these days for those mice is just a plain piece of paper.
Yes. What about other surfaces like wood, the shag in the floor, the carpet? timber floorboards, lying on the floor. Dr. Ryan has his has his workstation underneath the bench at home. Under that, you've got to get on your hands and knees to get to it. I've seen you use your mouse. You can use it from quite a distance, actually.
I can.
It's very impressive.
I can.
But yeah, you know, all these
I've
different
got a,
types
a
of
wireless,
services.
Wireless one, which doesn't have a trackball or anything inside it either, so I can sit there with it on the couch and I can just run it over the cushion on the couch or on the armrest.
Well, anyway, the third generation of mouse has come along. Now, I hadn't really heard too much about it because the last thing you think about when you're buying computers these days is, oh, give me a mouse. You know, what are they? They're $20 or something like that, and they come with a keyboard as well built in sometimes. So it's something you don't give too much thought to. But these days, there's these new BlueTrack mouses which have come out from Microsoft. Now
this is this is a Microsoft proprietary
sort
of thing.
They're hedging the bets on them, and I had a chat to the guys over in the United States during the course of the week. You're just about to hear that. But this is the end of the red mouse from Microsoft's point of view. No more red mice to come out of Microsoft anymore.
Right.
So, and that means you'll be able to use your cordless mouse in certain areas, and they're also really, really good for gaming because some mouses tend to be a bit sluggish and a bit laggish and things like that. So, if you're a gamer and you like using your mouse, then this is potentially good news. So, not knowing too much about all this new technology, I thought it was high time to find out. So, I made a few calls and we got to speak to some people. Those people are Debbie Ertek, hopefully I got your name right, Debbie. She's the mouse product marketing manager for the hardware group. And David Bond is the principal mechanical architecture of the hardware group for Microsoft Corporation in the US. Now, you're about to hear both these people in this chat that I had with them.
Yep.
But first up, a little bit about how this new little BlueTracky thing is going to revolutionize the mouse.
BlueTrack was the fusion of a lot of different ideas. It's been a collaborative effort between Microsoft hardware engineers in Redmond, electrical engineers, firmware engineers, the Fort Collins Design Center. It's a multidisciplinary thing that involves physics, it involves reliability, it involves software, it involves pixel architecture, it involves ASIC design and development. BlueTrack combines the power and the width of optical with the precision of laser. Welcome to BlueTrack, only for Microsoft.
If it's not optical and it's not laser, then what is BlueTrack?
BlueTrack is, there's like three big differences here. One is, of course, the blue light. One is the larger size beam. It's a 4X larger beam than compared to laser. And it's also the specular optics. So the optics are configured more in a specular configuration as opposed to a grazing illumination with the red optical illumination. And so that allows us to pick up a lot more surfaces than what we could track on before. And so it, in particular, it helps us on glossy surfaces, very high glossy surfaces like a granite countertop, and then also going on other extreme, some very rough surfaces like carpeting, where the larger beam allows us to continue to track on these surfaces which are very uneven. And, you know, one of the main things that we were trying to do with this tracking technology was to allow people to use their mouse and their computer at all kinds of locations, particularly like in your house as you're walking around, using your notebook computer in different locations throughout your house. And so that was a lot of the motivation behind developing this technology.
So why blue, David? Why did we go blue? Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, absolutely. The blue light allows much higher contrast images on certain types of surfaces that allows you to track better on those surfaces. That's the primary thing, is that shorter wavelength of the blue light gives you a better contrast on surfaces.
Okay, so even a reflective surface, because this has traditionally been the problem with these type of pointing devices, is we've needed mouse mats and things like that on our shiny desktops at work, but yet the blue just reflects off a shiny surface, as you were saying, like granite surfaces before. Blue just seems to work there, is that right?
Yeah, and there's another thing there too, like I mentioned before. It's in addition to the blue, it's the optical configuration of this, what we call the specular optics, where the LED is more vertically mounted into the mouse, and so it's shining more straight down at the surface, and that's what we refer to as a specular optics. That's another piece of it, critical piece that kind of helps out on those really glossy surfaces.
So you've basically redesigned the optics in the mouse. This is a complete overhaul of traditional mouse design, is it?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
This isn't a laser, and it's not an optical device, so And it's obviously changed the design of the mouse to blue. Is it similar in the way that it works? Like, is it obviously it shines light and it receives it in some manner, but is that the end of it? Or is it just, as you were saying before, optically, the optical path is a lot different?
Yeah, primarily in the optics, in the blue LED and in the optical configuration. Again, those are the primary differences. The actual way the tracking works with the what we'd call our correlation engine, you know, that's very similar to what we've done in the past.
And I think from a consumer point of view, when they're using the mouse, they're going to use it exactly how they would a laser or optical mouse. They're not going to notice a difference in the way they move their hand. What they are going to notice a difference in is the tracking accuracy. So they're not going to have to move it multiple times to make that move from one area to the other, even if they are on a shiny surface or an uneven surface. It'll just move where they want it to move immediately. There's less hand movement because of that, and they'll notice a difference in their comfort. We also have used it for gaming because of this. There's no lag time with BlueTrack, and so we're able to introduce it to our gaming mouse line as well.
Debbie, how many different product ranges are we going to start seeing BlueTrack in? Are you going to have different types of mice for different applications?
We definitely are. We have launched it so far in three products. We have the Explorer mouse, which is a desktop-sized mouse, and then the Explorer Mini mouse, which is more of a notebook-sized mouse. Both have snap-in transceivers, so you can take them with you anywhere. And then we've reintroduced it in January in our Sidewinder X8 mouse for gaming. And then we're going to continue this through our line. So our plan is to replace all of our laser products today with BlueTrack technology so that the customer's getting the best experience. So you'll see more announcements from us coming up in the next couple months.
And what's the cost of the technology compared to the traditional mouse technology, the red technology that we're used to?
Well, actually, the cost is pretty comparable from a development standpoint. A lot of the development has been done in-house as well, which keeps the cost down, of course. So because it's a Microsoft proprietary system, the cost for us is very comparable. But the performance is so much better than other mice out there that we want to make sure we're providing that technology to all of our customers. So our initial product launches, those were signature products. They have lots of Chrome features, ergonomic features as well. So they're at the US$79 and US$59 price point. But with our new products that we're launching soon, they'll be at the lower price points that we can bring them to a broader audience at the $39 and $49 U.S. price point.
So is this the end of the red mouse as we know it?
It is for Microsoft, and I think you'll see that the consumers that have tried it so far with our Explorer and Explorer Mini products have been raving about the technology. And press here in the U.S., and I know they're in Australia as well, have been very positive, trying it on every surface they can come up with.
So it's the end of the red mouse for Microsoft. The blue technology obviously seems like the way to go. It's going to become one of these durable devices, isn't it? How robust is the device of these new two products that you mentioned earlier? Are they built well? Are they solid like the traditional Microsoft mouses are? I'm sure they are, but are they along the same design and construction?
Actually, you know, that's a really good point, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that compared especially to laser mice, this particular type of optical technology is much more robust. And laser systems, because of the coherent light, they're much more sensitive to dust and dirt if it get into the optical system. And whereas opposed to this blue system, the way the optics is configured, again, with this large diffuse beam of light, if you will, it's much more tolerant if, you know, some dust or dirt gets up into that optical system, it's going to continue to work just fine. And so I'm actually really glad you brought up that point, because that is actually a really good selling point of this technology also.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I'm looking forward to putting one of those through the ringer and just see how well it does or doesn't work, actually. But I'm sure it'll be good, because I do tend to, unlike your good self, Graham, I do tend to find myself in a few boardrooms around the place. And it is a very frustrating thing when you have to use that goddamn flat thing on the front of your laptop to do your stuff.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
very annoying. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening. Did you happen to catch Google today with the Morse code at the top of Google? It was lost on a lot of people today.
I've just gone there now, yeah.
What does it say, Graham?
It says, da-da-dit, da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-dit.
It's Google in Morse code before just putting about it to through say, everybody's...
That sounds like G-O-O-G-L-E.
Yes.
Yeah.
If I knew my Morse code, I would know that.
We all know it now. If you want to know how to say Google in Morse code, go to google.com. But you have to be quick, I think.
Mm. Oh, that was very... I thought when I logged in today...
Yes, it might be gone by the time you're listening to this in other
markets. Yeah, it could be another... Yes. Yeah, exactly. But was it... It was Mr. Morse's birthday or something today. Is that the occasion? Does anyone know?
It seems to be the gist of it, yes. If you hover over it, it says Samuel Morse's birthday. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Google does clever things like that with its logo.
Some of the Google
art. They do. Yeah, they had a custom one up for Anzac Day the other day, I noticed.
Did they?
Yep.
Very good. All right, we're going to take a break. When we'll be back with more things. What are we going to be talking about? Pirate Bay, of all things.
Pirate Bay.
After the break.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Internet Explorer 8 officially came out of beta during the course of the week.
Images depicting a man vomiting outside a London pub were removed from the site.
Give it a try if you haven't.
I got stuck by our own spam filter.
Yeah, it's good like that. It works well.
There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
With many years with experience.
Entertaining.
You're an idiot. It's only three words.
Informative.
These new hard drives are all solid state.
Independent.
They need constant poking.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tricky thing, the English language.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, and a cast of thousands on our chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, all having fun up there and criticising the music that you hear during the breaks. But you might not have heard it if you're listening to the podcast, but
yes.
You're listening to us on the radio stations, there you go. Come along and say good day, all that sort of stuff, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Now, Google and Pirate Bay share Friday good news. This is rather an interesting piece that came out last week.
Yes.
Both Google and the Pirate Bay have achieved slight victories over their legal opponents. The Information Commissioner's Office has shot down a complaint put forward by the Privacy International that Google's Street View tool breached the Data Provisions Act. In the verdict, the privacy watchdog reinstated its previous supportive position, confirming that the removal of the service would be disproportionate to the relatively small risk of privacy detriment. Now, does this mean it's going to reflect in Pirate Bay's decision? Is this why Pirate Bay had a win, do you reckon?
How is Pirate Bay involved with this?
I'm not exactly 100% sure there, but this is all to do with Google and their pulling down of privacy. But the only thing I'm thinking of here is that it's neither here nor there when it comes to Pirate Bay. They're not actually doing what they've been found guilty of doing, allegedly. So
the only common thread is that they both had slight wins. Is that the...
Yeah, well, the lawyers representing Pirate Bay, which was the... What's that? How would you describe Pirate Bay? It's a peer-to-peer file sharing
network. PirateBay.org. It's a site that hosts torrent files, which are used in BitTorrent peer-to-peer file sharing networks.
Mm. Anyway, they've called for a retrial.
Yeah. They don't technically allow... They don't actually host illegal content. They just provide a way for people to get in touch with each other to share the content.
Yeah, the Pirate Bay file sharing site allows internet users to find and exchange files such as films and music, and it emerged that its operators, Mr. Lundstrom, Mr. Sund, and Mr. Wag, if that's how you pronounce their names, were given 1 year jail sentences by a judge that is a member of two Swedish pro copyright associations. Oh, it was rigged. So, there you go. We'll wait and see what happens there. But anyway, that's Google's news, and I guess that's the Pirate Bay series. A bit of legal things over the weekend. But I don't know. I must admit, the peer-to-peer stuff that I've always used has traditionally been for pulling down very large software distributions of legitimate software
That's one of the things that, yeah,
works
really
very
good on
well.
BitTorrent.
Very
is, yes, when a new version of Fedora comes out, yeah, I always hit the BitTorrent to download the DVD ISO.
How do you know that you're getting the right version on a BitTorrent stream, though? Do you pull it down the torrent off the actual
There's a couple of ways. You get the torrent file from the official source, so you get the torrent file from the Fedora site. Plus, once you've downloaded it, on the Fedora site, there's what's called an MD5 sum, which is a kind of checksum, and you can calculate
that. MD5 sum. I've seen that.
And you can, and you get a little program to run on your computer, and you just calculate the checksum or the MD5 some on your ISO that you've got on your computer and compare
ISO?
It to the...
What's an ISO?
It's a image file that allows you to burn a DVD.
Okay.
Or a CD. In this case,
so
it's a
DVD. So you
pull
down this ISO
so
using BitTorrent.
You do all the BitTorrent thing. You end up with one file that you burn your CD from. You do a calculation on that to reveal a complex number, and you check that against that number on the original Fedora site. Look, you asked me the question.
Nerd
it's
alert.
Your fault.
Nerd alert!
That's very good.
Oh, dear.
Sorry. Anyway, good. I'm glad we've sorted that out. Why are you looking at me like that? Oh, dear. Yes, have a look on the Ustream. Is the camera still up? Oh, yeah, sorry. Anyway, Bluetooth, that lovely little blue radio frequency that works between your mobile phone and your computer and your laptop and all those sorts of things.
Speaking of mice, before I have a Bluetooth mouse, which I really like, though I use
it
on my notebook.
But it's red, isn't it?
No, it's laser.
Well, it's still red, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. You can't see the light. It's,
can't you?
It's out of band.
Okay. Anyway, Bluetooth 3, the new standard, was ratified just recently.
Ooh, faster Bluetooth.
Devices built to the Bluetooth 3 specification will be able to use alternative antennas and 802.11 protocol adaption layer connectivity to improve data throughput as high as 24 megabits per second. What do you get at the moment on Bluetooth? It's not that fast, is it? Because it's just good enough to transfer something from a phone to another phone. It seems to take forever, doesn't it?
It's X megabits per second, I think. It's not super fast.
I'll get you an answer in a second.
Oh, Graham's frantically wikiing.
Yeah. Anyway, so Bluetooth 3 will be able to piggyback on the faster but less powerfully efficient 802.11 wireless transport in equipment featuring devices that support Bluetooth, 802.11, and Wi-Fi. Does this mean it's going to be more susceptible to interference too from the broadband video sender up the road, the D-Link thing, the local railway station and stuff like that? So
I wouldn't think so because both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi take steps to sort of avoid each other and to avoid interference, so... they're still operating in that very crowded 2.4 gigahertz band where everything operates.
Why don't
operates.
They go to 5 gig for where the N is? 802.11n. A nice high clean spectrum area where there's no microwave ovens or door openers. Or video senders for that matter.
Possibly just for legacy reasons because the old technology
5
is already there. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Bluetooth 2 is 2.1 megabits per second.
Okay. Well done, that man. He's found
it. Yeah, and Bluetooth 3 is still that, but it can get faster speeds by keeping the control as being Bluetooth, but actually running the data as Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So you can achieve Wi-Fi speeds for actually moving data around.
Excellent. All right, so Bluetooth 3 coming
to... It's like a blending of the technologies.
Yes, don't let the smoke out. Coming to a store near you. Dr. Ron, Facebook. You're a Facebook guru.
Facebook.
Tell me about the spies that are for hire.
The spies for hire on Facebook. Have you ever been worried about your...
I don't have a Facebook account, so I don't. I'm not worried about
it. The answer is no. Graham, have you ever been worried about privacy on Facebook?
No, because I don't tell it anything.
The answer for you is also no. Large companies and government departments, it's been revealed, are employing a new Sydney-based company to dig up dirt on staff by spying on their Facebook accounts, on their MySpaces, on their Twitter streams, and also on their YouTube posts. The company is called SR7, and SR7 specializes in, quote, online risk and reputation management, and claims to be the only company in Australia that actively monitors social networking sites on behalf of companies. So, Andrew, if you're concerned about proprietary information being leaked by a naive employee on Twitter or Facebook or some such social networking system, you can employ this company, SR7, to monitor exactly what they're doing and report back to you if they think there's going to be any potential issue.
And that's if you're silly enough to put on your Facebook account that your boss is an idiot, even if he is.
Yeah, or just working on the current XYZ project, and Andrew will be going, no, don't tell people that. We don't want people knowing we've got that project.
Look, I think that's just common sense with a lot of organisations, and that just goes to show that organisations who have an XYZ project that they don't want to talk about make sure that as part of the terms of the contract, when these contractors are put on, you know, you have secrecy clauses and privileges and things like that, it needs to be drawn to their attention in the first place because you don't want those things getting out. I guess the thing that with Facebook and those sort of social networking sites, which is proving to be interesting at the moment, is that when people have a sickie And, of course, you sit at home and you're on your deathbed with your laptop and you're Facebooking away.
Yeah.
Your boss can spy on you. What's she really up to today? And they can come and have a bit of a look. And this is causing a bit of flack in certain areas.
Yeah, so if you track a sickie and you ring, I mean, sorry, boss, okay. And then you go to the football and then you put on your Facebook page that you had a great time at the football. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Not good.
And then someone sees you on Ustream, and that's right. Then yep. Yeah, then you see,
and you forgot to turn off your Google latitude updates.
It's a bit like those kids that do silly things and videotape themselves doing silly things, and then when the long arm of the law catches up with them, yep. They go, "Is this you? No, not me.
Did you videotape yourself doing that? Yep, yeah. We'll have that. We'll show that in court. That'll be good.
Thanks. Yeah, exactly right.
That did never happen.
No.
I can see why you think that's me. It looks exactly like me.
Yes, same hair. Oh, look, that jumper, I'm still... Yeah, but no, it's not me, Oh, dear. All right, Mozilla, a very popular browser. Have you got your updates? I think we're up to number 9, I think, at the moment. Every time I turn my laptop on, it says, I'm just updating Firefox. Have you had an update of recent days? I got 2 today, I think, on different machines around the office to 3.0.9 or something.
I did notice that last time I used Firefox. I tend to use Chrome a bit more often, though.
Oh, the polished Chrome.
Mm.
We should talk about that too. But anyway, let's talk about
Firefox installed on this machine.
Firefox first. The Mozilla has announced a number of fixes for its browser, warning that there were four critical clause.
Ooh,
let me say that in English. There were four critical clause.
Not craw. Craw.
Oh dear, pass us another one. The advisory also contained 2 fixes with a high rating, 2 listed as moderate and 4 minor vulnerabilities. So maybe that's what 3.0.9 has addressed, because it's coming thick and fast at the moment for those Firefox users.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a Chrome user, Graham. You still happy with Chrome?
For some things, yeah. I choose my browser depending on what I'm doing.
Do you?
Yeah. So I like tonight, I've got Chrome open in, a dozen tabs, and I can easily slide my tabs around depending on what order we're going to talk about things. I like being able to move my tabs about.
The add-ons for Firefox. There's some brilliant add-ons out there for Firefox.
I like using Firefox at home. It's got an add-on that shows me how much of my monthly quota I've used on my broadband, whether I've made a dent in my 110 gigabytes yet.
I found a really good add-on.
Sort of stuff, yeah.
One of my favourite add-ons at the moment, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I will anyway, shows you when you type a password in to log into something?
Yeah.
And it goes ...
Yeah.
There's a little add-on that I've got which removes the dots and shows you what the password is in case you've forgotten what your password is.
that's a bit wrong, yep.
It is a bit wrong, but nonetheless, it's very convenient at times when you're thinking, oh my God, I can't remember that password, but it's stored in here somewhere. So, yeah, very handy.
Mm.
All right, just also before we go to the Oddspot gadget and website of the week, GeoCities. You ever use GeoCities?
No.
Back in the good old days when people used to come and build really ordinary websites?
No, they were a hosting company many years ago.
Yeah,
Yahoo owned them. Owns them.
You can host a website there for free, but they put ads all over it.
Oh, yeah, it was a shocking stuff. Anyway, they're flicking the switch on that. GeoCities will be no longer.
Ah.
Yeah, I can tell you're upset about that. But yeah, Yahoo announced it's closing GeoCities, a free service that hosts personal homepages, which it acquired 10 years ago during the dot-com boom. The service, which became synonymous with early amateur websites and old-school animated images, is no longer accepting new customers and will be closed later this year. Sign of the times?
As Americans would say, it's the end of an era.
It's that's very good. The end of an era. Or somebody said to me today, we should leave unsaid what should be left unsaid.
Who said that to you, your wife?
No.
It's good advice.
It is. Oh, dear. And obviously, just before we go to the break, because we're rapidly running out of time, Internode, the South Australian ISP, is going to resell Optus 3G wireless broadband.
Resell Optus 3G Optus wireless broadband. Okay, so you can sign up with Internode for wireless internet access, and it'll be carried by Optus's 3G phone network.
Yep. Okay. The ISP said it would launch its Node mobile data products tomorrow, which maybe previously when you're listening to us. The two plans on offer are
Tuesday.
A tiny 250 megabit plan for $14.95. You compare that to the incumbents, that's quite reasonable, really. So $14.95 for 250 meg a month, and the big 3 gig plan for $39.95 or 40 meg a month. Probably still pricey compared to some other, well, not pricey, but it's comparable with other carriers. But shop around. I don't know what Optus Broadband's like. I just know that they're trying all sorts of accelerators, well, so I don't think the infrastructure is as good as some of the other carriers.
A long time ago, we did, I'm not sure how long ago, we had a story that the Optus mobile broadband network was somewhat oversubscribed and suffering speed issues as a result. So
too many people, not enough bandwidth.
Yeah.
Equals slow, unhappy web surfing.
Yes, angry customers ringing up on the phone, shaking fists. Not good.
Not good indeed. All right, back with website ad. You know what's coming up. That's after this.
Suffering suck attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. TechTalk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No.
Do you block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffany, techie, propeller head, geeky.
Independent.
So SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now, if you get Inga from Sweden showing her wares.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is the Polar FT80 Fitness Wristwatch. For people who like to exercise and use those fitness watches, you know, the Polar brand.
No.
Gadgets?
No.
People who are fitness fanatics will know Polar brand. They make like the heart monitors and the wristwatchy things that Bluetooth back to you.
I drink coffee. I'm a techie head.
Yes,
fitness stuff.
If you're looking at upgrading your fitness watch, you need to have a serious look at this. The Polar FT80 is a heart rate monitor, but more than simply counting beats per minute, it actually tracks your recovery time to tell you when to hit the next interval and when to take a breather. There's on-screen graphic feedback, which makes it easy to follow. When you get home, the unit syncs wirelessly with Polar's web service.
Now we're talking.
For powerful post-workout evaluation. Best yet, it won't look out of place when you transition from sports club to nightclub. Oh, must be pretty swanky. Swanky looking device. You can order online $350 from PolarUSA.com. That's the gadget of the week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
TweetStats.com.
Oh, yeah. Another tweets thing.
The next chapter, yes, in our never-ending quest for Twitter support sites and add-ons and web-based bolt-ons. Graham's already got it dialed up on his computer. TweetStats lets you graph your Twitter statistics. You can see your average number of tweets per hour, your average number of tweets per month. You can see your reply statistics. You can see aggregate daily and hourly tweets. Find out what hour of the day is the busiest for you when you're tweeting. All you have to do is enter your, or someone else's indeed, Twitter username. You don't need a password. It just pulls all of your tweets out of the public timeline. TweetStats then examines these tweets and draws some user-friendly graphs. You can also click on the Tweet Cloud button. This is really cool, and you can see a montage of your most used words and tags.
Oh, goodness.
So that's a bit of fun. If you're active on Twitter and you haven't already done so, have a look at TweetStats.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Two thieves who stole wood in an Estonian forest.
Not local then.
No, not just around the corner. We're caught on a webcam set up to watch a family of eagles. According to wildlife rangers.
Just to say, what would you do having a webcam in a forest?
They were looking to see if the tree fell down, if there was no one around, was the man still wrong or something. Internet surfers contacted authorities on Wednesday after hearing a sawing noise. So it did have sound.
Oh, webcam sound in a forest. Yes, amazing.
And the webcam was perched near an eagle nest in central Estonia. Rangers went to the site and caught two men felling trees without a license. They now face a fine for theft and could get into hot water for disturbing eagles because it is illegal to approach a nesting area between March and August. Estonia
did they deny the fact that it was their image on the webcam? No, that's not us.
Couldn't say that. They were caught red-handed. Estonia is a nation of 1.3 million people. It's one of the most heavily forested countries in Europe. It's also one of the most internet-wide places, earning the nickname Estonia.
Oh. There you have it, our Tech Talk Radio odd spot.
Very good.
Thank you, Dr. Ron.
Graham's trying to find the webcam, but it's been stolen as well.
Oh, good. Fantastic.
My Googling skills are not up to scratch, but never mind.
Well, that's Tech Talk Radio for this week, the last week of April, first week of May, depending on where you might be listening to us.
Yes.
Wherever you are around Australia, we're heading into the cooler months, and as a result, the interaction is really ramping up at the moment. So come along and say good day, chat.techtalkradio.com.au live, or send us email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. We like hearing from people, hopefully very shortly, maybe next week, if all things go according to plan.
Lots of ways to stay in touch with us. They're all on the website.
How's the forum going, just quickly, in the last 15 seconds?
Forum's going well.
Going great. Yeah.
We've had new users.
Forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Yeah, good. Excellent. There are lots of ways, as you say. All right. The same radio station you're listening to now, the same time next week, we shall return with more of the show that is Tech Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.